From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Outer Mission.
I live in the Nastro.
I live in the Mistro.
La Playa.
I live in the Transmission.
Haight-Ashbury.
I'm in the sunny but filthy Mission.
Coming up, we're going to the corner of Golden Gate and Leavenworth in San Francisco's Tenderloin. We'll hear what it's like to grow up in a neighborhood that has a bad reputation.
They don't know that a lot of families live here.
Then how poetry can reveal hidden truths.
You see a gloomy neighborhood, scary and stained. I see hopeful community, learning and living.
And we'll head to a historic and active hiring hall to see how people get work.
Again, I have 4 spots left on job 7. If you don't even need our list.
Living and finding work in the Tenderloin. We're exploring the intersection today on Cross Currents. Stay with us. This week, we're presenting The Intersection, an audio series that looks at change in the Bay Area by looking up close at one street intersection at a time. KALW's David Boyer spent the better part of a year at Golden Gate and Leavenworth in the Tenderloin, getting to know the people who call that corner home. Today, we'll meet the family of a girl growing up in a small apartment overlooking the bustle of the neighborhood. Here we go.
I'm proud to introduce our student poets who are here to share with all of you.
Emiliano.
I open the old, rusty metal gate and walk out onto the dirty pavement.
You never know what you're going to find at the corner of Golden Gate Avenue and Leavenworth in San Francisco's Tenderloin. Yesterday, an elderly woman was selling turquoise painkillers, Klonopin, right out of her hand. A few days ago, a group of millennials from a nearby tech company were handing out granola bars and fruit. But on this sunny afternoon, there are kids on the corner reading their poetry.
I see trees with sensitive green leaves falling down to the dirty ground.
I see a worn-out corner store.
I hear police sirens.
There are people shouting at each other, others devoid of spirit, lying on the sidewalk.
Realizing that they're slowly killing themselves and wondering how they got there.
Welcome back to The Intersection. Kids might not be the first thing that comes to mind when you think of the Tenderloin, but the neighborhood has by far the highest density of children in the city, somewhere between 3,000 and 4,000 kids. Within a half block of this corner, there are 2 childcare centers and Demeriac Academy, a private Catholic school. The poems you just heard are from the 8th grade class. Almost all of the students are from the neighborhood, and they go to the school tuition free. The poems show us the Tenderloin through their eyes, and one of them really got to me.
You See, I See by Brittany Peering. You see gum-covered, dark gray pavement. I see a man on the pavement, praying for help. My name is Brittany Peering. I'm in 8th grade, and I live in the Tenderloin. The assignment was to write a poem about your neighborhood, and I just thought about how other people see it and how I see it. It's just thought as like a bad neighborhood with bad people. A lot of people don't want to go into the Tenderloin. They try to avoid it. And I was just trying to write something that would give a reaction from the readers when, like, open their eyes. They don't know that a lot of families live here. My mom and dad, they've been married for a really long time. I'm not exactly sure how they decided to come here. But I think it was because, like, rent was low or something.
My name is Michael Peering, and I am the father of Brittany Peering. I moved to Tenderloin because we were kicked out of our apartment that I was living in Soma area. And I basically had about a week to move out. So I moved into the building that my future wife was living in. I figured, well, that's a good reason to be closer to her. So, and the rent was pretty cheap, so I decided to move in.
When I was single, my brother and I were roommates. So when I got married, I moved to room 218. So since then, I'm still there. I'm Eva Peering, and I've been married for 25 years.
We have 4 kids.
Kimberly and John, then after that, then James. And then after 8 years, Brittany came.
So we raised 4 kids inside the small apartment inside the Tenderloin. Raising a kid in Tenderloin versus other parts of the city, I think you just kind of have to maybe watch him a little closer.
You see an ambulance proving how dangerous this neighborhood is. I see a person who is about to save the life of another. I'm not allowed to walk alone through the Tenderloin at any time.
Her brother walks her to school every day, and they kind of basically just go straight to school and come, you know, straight back home.
Like, I'd like to walk alone sometimes, or with a friend, but I know it's like for the best.
And I'm sure she sees things, you know, that she wouldn't see in other neighborhoods, you know, more homelessness and...
Well, I see some people doing bad stuff, but there's also, like, children walking to school with their families. But I don't really stay outside in the neighborhood often.
She, I guess, finds ways to keep occupied, you know, indoors, you know, playing games or reading versus going out, playing frisbee or outdoor activities like riding a bike. She doesn't get much sun, put it that way, living in the Tenderloin.
I just stay indoors in my house. It's small but comfy. And in a corner, sometimes I make a fort out of blankets. I live with my brother and my dad and my mom, my grandma. I used to live with my brother and my sister, but they moved out because, like, they went to college.
We have a very small apartment. I would think maybe 400 square feet. The kitchen is probably 12 feet by 15 feet. You walk down a small hallway and the bedroom, living room might be 14 feet by 16 feet. And we have our whole family living in there. But we do have quite a bit of space for bedding. I and my wife and I sleep on the California king bed.
And I sleep with my grandma on a bunk bed. And my fort is on my bed, too.
Brittany kind of hangs out on her on the bottom of the bunk bed playing her iPad, or she's on a computer.
I'll do homework, and I like to watch YouTube videos. I also play video games, PC games like Minecraft. My dad, he likes to play video games as well.
I actually grew up with Pong and the older games like that, Atari 2600, Nintendo. And, you know, in 1987, I was in the Guinness Book of World Records for the high score in Super Mario Brothers. Now I got the Xbox One, so that's kind of my main hobby.
I don't like those type of games, but when we do play together, it's really competitive. Most of the time, he beats me in his score. You see a beige building with broken windows and stained walls. I see Mom taking care of her four children, saving all her money for their future.
My mom told me when we left the Philippines, take care of yourself, take care of the family, get a job. So I have three jobs. Until I got married, then I have only two jobs.
My mom is a DSW shoe clerk, and she's also a caretaker.
I'm working day and night, and my husband works all the way to Livermore.
He has to wake up really early to go to work.
It's a rough commute, you know, almost 100 miles every day round trip. I leave at 6 in the morning, and I get back usually home about 5:45.
I know he works with, like, batteries. Sometimes when he goes home from work, there'd be, like, holes in his shirt because of acid.
I work at Lawrence Livermore Lab. I kind of fell into maintenance and working on batteries, which my dad was in. And I don't want my daughter, you know, doing what I do. I'd rather her, you know, use her mind to work more than physical, you know, be more of a white-collar worker than a blue-collar worker.
You see a gloomy neighborhood, scary and stained. I see hopeful community, learning and living.
Yeah, I was impressed with that poem that she wrote.
I mean, I was surprised that she can express herself to do that poem. And I said, did somebody help you to do that? And they said, no, Mommy.
So, yeah, I was very happy that she actually thinks that way. You know, I was glad that she has a positive outlook on what the things that she sees in the Tenderloin. Because most people come and walk through the Tenderloin and they see homelessness and they see older buildings and they think, well, this isn't a place I want to live. You know, there's not much here for a family, but she sees the opposite.
You know, there's a lot of chances and opportunities here.
You know, we're no different, you know, in the Tenderloin from anywhere else. We want the best for our families and try to provide that for them. Our main concern, my wife and I, is just getting the best education possible.
We were so very grateful that they opened a school here. And at the time, my first daughter, Kimberly, She was in a fifth grader, and my husband and I were planning to send Kimberly to any private school, you know. And I told it to my husband, there's no way we can afford it. But just silently, I heard that from the church. I said, Michael, they're opening a private school. Can you imagine in this area? And, you know, I was thinking about it's a miracle happening here.
We've had three kids already go through DeMarillac, so we know that's a real good school. And if there wasn't a DeMarillac Academy in the Tenderloin, we probably would have moved out of the neighborhood. Brittany is doing really well at school, and, you know, we're very proud of her. And she got accepted into Sacred Heart to go to high school.
We will support her, whatever she wants to do in her life. I think she wants to be a leader or a writer or I don't know. I can't, it's so hard to predict, but she is so very smart. And I told her, I guess you got daddy's brain, but you got my beauty. So I told her.
I'm not sure what I want to be. Sometimes I want to be a coder, like coding websites or video games. Yeah. Other times I want to be like a famous music celebrity, like Ariana Grande. But I want to have like a brain like Gandhi, because he made really powerful changes in the world and powerful speeches. I want to have like a brain like his and a life like Ariana Grande.
Sure, it's an unlikely combination, but believe it or not, Brittany's dream life might not be as far-fetched as it sounds. Brittany is the president of her eighth grade class, and she can sing. Recently, she worked with Jordan Karp, a local songwriter, who volunteered to help her put her words to music.
Let's try that first line.
This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. You're listening to a special KALW presentation of The Intersection, an audio series that looks at change in the Bay Area through physical intersections and street corners. KALW's David Boyer is taking us to the corner of Golden Gate and Leavenworth in San Francisco's Tenderloin District. The Tenderloin is one of the poorest neighborhoods in a city that has one of the largest gaps between rich and poor in the country.
I work two jobs right now. I'm working day and night.
I want a nice job that's gonna get paid $15 an hour with good benefits.
You wanna clean up this corner? Don't bring San Francisco police, bring HR.
Here again is David Boyer at The Intersection.
When it comes to jobs and upward mobility, there are a few signs of hope in the Tenderloin. One of the most prominent is the Union Hall right here on the corner of Golden Gate and Leavenworth.
Actually, I think I'm going into the Union Hall to see what I had to do to become part of that union so I can start getting some work to put a roof over your head. I mean, sometimes I have a roof over my head, sometimes I don't.
The union he's referring to is Unite Here Local 2. It represents 12,000 hospitality workers in San Francisco and San Mateo. And it's been right here on this corner for 40 years.
I mean, this is the home of the American dream. This is the home of people who clean toilets and wash dishes.
That's Kim Jackson, a former cocktail waitress who has worked for this union for more than 30 years.
This is where, you know, working people can have enough control over their lives to where they can plan a future for their children. This is the place right here on the corner of Golden Gate and Leavenworth.
It is not an understatement to say that Kim's dedicated her life to the cause. Kim agrees to give me a tour and school me on the basics of union organizing. But first, she wants to make sure I talk to some of the union's rank and file members.
My name is Josephine Rivera. I grew up in a small town in the Philippines named Laguna. I left the Philippines 1986 when I was 15 years old. So I worked as a room cleaner at the Marriott for 15 years. Cleaning rooms is just, it's back-breaking. It's pretty hard. So one day somebody talked to me about the union, that they were like trying to organize us, like giving us information. They told us about the room quota, that when you have a union, instead of cleaning 17 rooms, you'll be cleaning 14 rooms. And then on top of that, the benefits make a big difference. We have childcare program. Right now, my daughter, she come here for the last few months to study the SAT, make sure that she's gonna get a good grade. That will impact her, you know, for the rest of her life. I just have to like save money for so yeah.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you.
I meet back up with Kim.
How did it go?
It went great.
Yeah, that is the union. Our members are more than 50% women. We are certainly more than 50% people of color. Very, very large percentage of immigrants. Hospitality industry, it's hard work. It's dirty work in many cases. And immigrants find this work as kind of the entryway to the economy. And that's certainly true here in San Francisco. We certainly have many people who live in the Tenderloin, because this is the cheapest place you can live here in San Francisco. And I think that a lot of people, it may be your first stop, but maybe once you get a good union job and you get an economic foothold in this city, maybe you're going to move your family into a quieter neighborhood.
The way most people become members of Unite Here is they get hired at a hotel that's already unionized. Or like Josephine, they work at a hotel where the workers decide to organize and vote to join. But there is one other way to get all those union benefits. It's by being a member of the hiring hall.
We're going to the hiring hall?
Yeah.
Okay.
110 to 120.
Sell the building.
And I have 4 spots left on job 7. If you don't even need a list, if it worked, they need to come there right now.
We enter a room that looks like an off-track betting parlor, with linoleum, fluorescent lights, and a row of bank teller windows. There's at least 200 people. Some are lined up along one wall, others gather in groups. They're speaking what sounds like 20 different languages, and they're all watching one guy who's calling out the jobs.
Job 12 is closed.
So the hiring hall is the place where,
120 to 130.
Let's say there's a convention, and so there's a big, huge banquet at Hotel X downtown. They'll call the hall, and they'll say, I need 30 banquet waiters and 20 bussers and 5 bartenders. Our folks will come in here. The people who've been here the longest get to choose jobs first.
130 to 140.
And that's why there's a guy barking numbers over the PA.
15 is closed, 170 to 180.
He's calling members in order of their seniority. There's also a guy keeping track on a chalkboard of which gigs are filled and which are still open.
Again, I have 4 spots left on job 7. If you don't even need a list.
The really important thing about it is that it takes what is basically contingent work in most places where there's no union and turns it into a real job. So you can work in 5 different hotels over the course of a week or a month. And between all of your jobs, you will have worked enough to get medical benefits.
So I have 2 left on job 23, it's breakfast, 1 left on 7, and about 10 left on 8.
My name is Santiago Reyes. What's going on around here? Are we getting jobs for the weekend? They have jobs in all the different hotels, breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
My name is Luis Mascarenas. I work out of the union hiring hall as a server and also in the kitchen. I live in the Sunset, but some people live far away. They come all the way from East Bay. They also come over the Golden Gate Bridge. You can always work when you want to work, And then also, we get a pension, we get vacation, sick leave.
50 to 160.
Ah! Only 10 more jobs.
Friday night, that's it. 70 to 9. 90 to 200, 1 to 10.
Whoa. He's calling the numbers fast. Nobody wants it. Everybody's working.
90 to 100. Okay.
Okay, Dave.
I'm going to be back in about 2 minutes. We have one.
See ya.
Bye.
Kim meets me outside the hiring hall, and our tour continues around the corner.
So now we're going inside the union hall proper. As you can see, we're not real big on decor. It's fairly clean in here, but it's pretty run down. As you can see as we're wandering around, what you mostly see are big meeting rooms, because that's what a union is when people meet together to decide what course of action they want to take.
All right, everyone, thank you for coming. This is our last meeting of the year. It's been a busy year, right?
We got a new president.
So now I have the honor of running these membership meetings. So we want to take stock of 2015 and what we were able to accomplish as a union. And then we want to start to look ahead. What does the next year look like? What are the priorities for our union? And to position Local 2 for when our contracts expire in 2018. And the battle that we're going to face.
Sometimes we have to go on strike. Sometimes we take action against employers, union and non-union, if that's what the workers decide that they need to do.
And that's why, for the past 7 years, Local 2 members gather week in and week out at a non-union hotel in the financial district. After often grueling day shifts at nearby hotels, union room cleaners and servers head directly to the picket line to show and shout their support for the non-union workers inside.
My name is Elena Duran, and I work at the Palace Hotel. I'm a food server. I've been a member of the union for 24 years. I'm original from Mexico, and I love to be at the picket line. For instance, Le Meridian, we are picketing right now. Those people, they want to be unionized. They're looking at, okay, if I unionize, I will have job security and healthcare, that instead of paying $500 or $600 a month, I will pay $10. It's a big help.
The protest lasted nearly 12 hours, and about 5 p.m., several dozen protesters sat down and blocked the front doors.
We blocked the entrance so people wouldn't get in. And it was fun, and I was on the news.
If you do not disperse, you will be subject to arrest for trespassing.
My son calls me, and he says, my auntie just called that she saw you, that you get arrested. Is that true? And I were like, yes. And then he said, where are you? And I said, oh, just coming out of the police station. And he said, oh, mama, again? And I was like, yeah, it was fun.
You know, power concedes nothing without a demand. It never has and it never will. It's really, really hard struggle, but we win.
So they will not stop picketing until the workers at Le Meridian can vote on whether or not to unionize. Closer to the union hall, just one block away in fact, another battle is just beginning.
Okay, folks, we're going to get going.
The dilapidated Renoir Hotel is being redeveloped as a luxury hotel in the middle of mid-market. The area has been written off for decades, but in 2012, Twitter moved in, followed by a bunch of other tech companies. And within the last couple of years, it's been changing, fast, and filling up with more expensive apartments, retail, and restaurants. So when the owners of the new hotel refused to commit to allowing its workers to organize, the union was having none of it.
There's no guarantee that these won't be dead-end, low-wage, no-benefit jobs. My name is Anand Singh. I'm the president of Unite Here Local 2. You know, we're not just a union for hotel workers in this city. This is our neighborhood. And we want to make sure that as things develop and as money flows into the mid-market area in the Tenderloin, that it doesn't go to, you know, precious few at the very top of the ladder, but really all boats are raised equally and working people have a fair shake.
So they'll do what they do best, apply pressure. They recently held a press conference right in front of the worksite, and longtimer Kim Jackson says they won't rule out picketing.
You know, it's going to be easier to pick it if we have to because it's a block and a half from the union.
In the meantime, she's keeping her eye on the big picture.
You know, look, one of the most wonderful things about working for my union is that we do make a difference in people's lives. And we organize people to make a difference in their own lives. But it's all about organizing. I mean, that's what is going to change and or save Golden Gate Avenue, is organizing.
You've been listening to The Intersection, an audio series by KALW's David Boyer. You can find the episodes on iTunes, and we've got a link at kalw.org. We're also proud to be presenting them all this week here on Cross Currents. Tomorrow, we'll hear about the open-air drug market on the corner and what the community is doing about it.
It's looked at as a bad neighborhood with bad people.
I don't like this rumor that it's dangerous. People look at some drug dealers like, ooh, they're dangerous. They're really not, unless you're involved in their drug dealing.
In-depth stories from the corner of Golden Gate and Leavenworth in San Francisco's Tenderloin, tomorrow at 5 here on KALW. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.